Next time you fly on business, arrive feeling fresh in Emirates Business Class. On your flight, you can sink into leather seats that recline flat for a better sleep. You can enjoy delicious regional meals and premium drinks. And there's onboard Wi-Fi if you need to work. Along with Emirates chauffeur-driven airport transfers and entry to the luxurious Emirates Lounge, it's just a better way to do business. Book now on Emirates.com.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
And we're talking now about our industry review, where we look at a particular industry, its evolution, where it's going in the future. And we have a number of sports journalists in the studio, to which everyone on the premises said, I hope you have enough time for those three. So I don't know what they meant by that, but they're all here to try and prove the point. So let me introduce the panel. So we have Roy Curtis, who is a well-known sports writer and columnist with the Daily Star. We have David Kelly, who's chief sports analyst writer with the Irish Independent, and Alana Canaan, should I say, who's a sports writer with the Irish Independent, and her work also has appeared in the Belfast Telegraph and the Sunday World, correct?
Correct, yeah, I guess.
You look
like
you go to the affiliates. Sunday World. I don't remember that.
Well, yeah. As affiliates of the...
affiliates, I like that word.
Independent, yes.
Okay, folks, listen, you're all very welcome. So what we're going to talk about today, or try to and attempt to do so, is the sports journalism business and sports media, right? So they're and the business of sport. It's a bit of a hodgepodge in that sense. David, I'm going to kick off with you, okay, because you're on my left-hand side, so that's where I'm going to direct the first question. You've been in this game a lot, people listening in. I know David myself going back a long time, but that's for another program and another time. But if I was going to ask you a question, when you first arrived into the building earlier, would you become a sports journalist now if you knew what you know now, et cetera, et cetera? Does it still have the allure for you after all these years?
Yeah, I had a few minutes to think about that. And good morning, everybody. And good to see you again, my old colleague, Emmett. You know, I grew up obviously in a different time. There was less television, less exposure to media, and communities were tighter. The world was tighter. And I was speaking last night to somebody else about globalization, that we know everything about everything now. So there are more industries to pursue. I think, personally, it's different because, I millennials these days, you know, I'm 52 now. I didn't grow up with a phone at my fingertips and with access to so much information. So I think, you know, my mind was kind of, you know, questing information, and that's kind of how I... One of the ways I kind of spilled into...
So if I put a notebook into your hand and you go off to review, whether it's GAA or rugby or League of Ireland this evening, a game, do you still get a buzz out of that, or is it just work?
No, I do. The bits of the work that I love are talking to people and finding out information and why this happened, or what happened there, or why a player did something in a certain match, whether it was yesterday or 10 or 20 years ago. So I like that aspect of the why and the how and the interaction with people, which, you know, again, we'll probably touch on it later, but in terms of 2026 compared to maybe 1996, when maybe myself and Roy is of a similar vintage, began in this industry, that sense of talking to people and finding out why people did things was always there. Whereas now, with the overload of information, it can be very easy to get lost. But I still have that kind of childlike innocence and that youthful
exuberance. Yeah, and I mean, I'll ask Roy on this. I mean, as somebody who doesn't do sports journalism and hasn't, unfortunately, I'd love to have done it, but when I see the press conferences now, and I'm not picking anyone out or any team out, I mean, it seems a lot of it very sterile, very prepackaged, very choreographed. Now, I know there's a lot more going on than the press conferences, but is that a negative in this industry, that it has become almost professional and too global and so on and so forth?
Well, certainly that packaging exists. I'm sort of fortunate. Like Dave, I've been nearly 40 years in the industry, and you had absolute access to sports people when I started. I mean, I went to Olympic Games, World Cups, where you were dealing face to face with people. After all Ireland finals, you could go into a dressing room while guys are just getting out of the shower and talk to them, and you're getting the raw emotion of how they feel, and you're able to give an insight. And to, like Dave, I mean, what I do, I'm lucky I don't spend a lot of time at press conferences. I do more long read type pieces. So you get to sit with people. But I find increasingly the people you're sitting with and the people you're getting the best stuff from are people who are finished in sport. I did a long piece last week with Jason Sherlock, who turned 50, reflecting on his life, with people like Mick Galway, with people like Ken Doherty, who are of similar generation and are willing to share insights. I think the GAA in particular has hidden away a lot of its stars. And I think as a a marketing opportunity, it's a great one wasted because there's so many interesting stories, and yet team managers seem insistent on hiding away players for fear that access to players will reveal some state secret that's going to undermine the performance. So I think, I mean, you asked Dave, would he want to be a journalist now, with coming into it, knowing what he knows? I think you have to be vocational about it, because the entry salaries are nowhere near, in relative terms, what they were when we came in. Everyone has a plan till they take a punch, as Mike Tyson said, and online came along and newspapers didn't really know how to deal with the online situation first, so content was given away free. It was the equivalent of having a pub where the bar was charging full price and the lounge was giving it away free.
And is it difficult as well for you to add value? What I mean by that is every game now, you see the game.
Yeah.
You've got a load of pundits who comment on the game. They comment before, they comment after. Mm. Like is there much left for you to talk about after the...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the approach has completely changed. You've got to provide more depth, more quality. There's got to be a point of difference. Because with social media, everyone knows what every detail that has happened. So you're looking for expert analysis. You're looking for quality writing. And I think initially, there was a temptation to dumb down when a lot of stuff went online. And it took a while to come to the realization that your punter is not a mug. And if you want him to pay for something, he's going to want quality. He's going to want point of difference. And I think it was interesting that the Irish Times, before Christmas, announced that their journalism was now fully funded by subscribers. And I think there was a recognition amongst people that rather than the sort of the Wild West of a lot of the social media stuff, that there are quality journalists doing quality work. Okay. And if you're willing to pay for
it. Let's bring in our third speaker, Alana Canan. She's a freelance sports writer. And I hope these two guys haven't put you off, by the way. It's too late now. You're already in this industry. So just to put the same question to you, to bring value from your point of view, you can interview somebody, you can write a long form piece, as Roy said, as David says, you can go and, you know, get news and interview people. So how do you see yourself? What's the enjoyable part of your job out of those ones?
Yeah, well, I'm full time with The Independent at the minute, but still have a few freelance projects. But just on that, like, I think it's an interesting time we're in at the minute, in that the story can sort of live and breathe in a lot of different aspects. So you could have something that maybe would suit a podcast more. There's kind of print or online stuff where maybe a camera wouldn't necessarily warrant a better conversation out of that interview. And then other times, like, there are video or radio specific kind of things. So I think at the minute, yeah, that's one of the major things I'd find anyways, coming into it. You sort of certainly have to have a few kind of strings to your bow, and then there's advantages. And
so you're saying being able to do all of those, you know, do a podcast, write a piece for print, online, interview, you know, you should be across that whole suite of things as well.
Well, it's kind of just the way I find anyways, in my experience, that it's going. You kind of have to have the few attributes and then kind of see what's working for you. But there's definitely pros and cons to all of them as well, from the content perspective, like, as to what will work.
David, just I lecture to a lot of journalism students, right? And a lot of them want to do sports journalism. Like, the two I get the most, well, three, is crime, war correspondent, or sports journalists, right?
They're all the same, really.
Yeah, not many business journalists, but there are one or two, but they all want to be sports journalists. So is the gap between the reality and this wonderful sort of valorous world they hope to get into, is that massive in reality, or is there still that glamour thing? Or
there is glamour there, because it's exciting. I mean, you have the prospect, as Roy and myself have done, and Alana have done, of going to major finals in Croke Park, going to Six Nations, Olympics,
World Cups.
Like, that is boys' own stuff. And you know, you ask me about what I start now, like, I probably would, but, like Alana has said, and like, I'm an old dog being taught new tricks. The courses would be different, because it would be the modern suite of video, podcast, audio, all of which I do, not adequately yet, but I love learning about it. And I think the fundamental thing is that, as I said earlier, it's still, you know, a basic. You know, a lot of men and women, or women, go out and they're hitting a ball, either man-o-man or a woman against a woman, or in a team event, or it's golf. It's still sport, ancient sport, modern sport, still sport, and it's still characters, and it's still stories. It's all about telling stories. Mm. Now, the format of the story has changed.
Okay.
And I think the modern media, like, you know, the main outlets, and I won't discriminate by mentioning just one, have got that maturity, as Roy said, from the Wild West days of we have to give everything away because we're scared of the internet. And they were scared of themselves. But I think now there's a bit of a maturity that we can tell stories in different ways. But maybe different ways at once, or maybe just one
but
way.
But if you were advising...
And they know the different people who need to tell
those
stories.
If you were advising youngsters, right? I remember actually talking to Malachy Logan years ago when I was a business journalist at the time and saying, should I get into sports journalism? And he told me the following. He said, if you want to do sports journalism, he said, you will start pitch side, he said, with a notebook in your hand, and he picked out, no disrespect to anybody, he said, you'll be at Turner's Cross, he said, covering a game on a Friday night in the rain. He said, that's where you're going to start. Don't think you're going to be going to World Cups or Euros. So is it a tough one for youngsters that they know there's a lot of hard yards go in first, whereas other things they could do, you get the kickoff straight away?
Like, one of my first jobs was queuing up on the in Drumcondra outside a phone box while an old lady was using the phone.
Lana's saying, what's a phone box?
For about 10 minutes with my coins in my hand and having handwritten a hastily rewritten thrice or four times match report of Limerick losing to Shamrock Rovers 5-4 after extra time in Talbot Park on a Sunday. And
that's some memory.
He's very precise, isn't he?
Utterly sweating. And there were two people in the queue behind me. So I knew I was going to have to be even longer than this woman to phone through to a woman in the newspaper who would type out the words I was incoherently passing over the telephone. So I had that apprenticeship, and you went to swimming bowls, all sorts of different events, and you had to ring dog tracks and get results or ring...
Alana, does that appeal to you, the apprenticeship idea? Or do you kind of, and people of your age group, do they go, I don't want to do an apprenticeship, I want to be straight in there? Because David, in his phone box in Drumcondra, is competing nowadays with, I can go and work in TikTok, I can go and work in X, I can go and work for Facebook. Like, just tell and be really honest here.
I know David was talking about earlier, the millennials, even... I'm in kind of the Gen Z bracket even, and she's got an awful bad rep, but like
that's another conversation.
Yeah, but in my experience, like, you definitely have to. The work experience is the only way that you'll definitely build your way into it. And yeah, like, there are certainly times where it can be sort of difficult, but you do have to earn your stripes as well. And there's a lot more experienced people than me, even in this room, that, you know, could testify to that. But
Roy, I want to ask you something. It's a bit of a gripe of mine, but I think you'll all agree. So I'm going to try to get you on side here, right? But I think this whole world of sports media has been colonised by ex-players, right? Everywhere I go, it's... and I don't want to mention the name. So the people who are kind of the setters of the pace or paint the pictures are ex-players. They're boom, boom, boom. You got Gary Neville, you got this, you got Pat Spillane, you got do-do-do. And nothing against ex-players, but they're very much like, unless you've played at this level, your comment doesn't carry as much weight. Whereas you guys, the journalists, it's just like you're sort of like in the second lane or something. And I actually would like to hear the journalists. You can't just say somebody because they've played the game, it's more valid in some additional way. Do you have any sympathy with that opinion?
I have huge sympathy, and I think anyone working within journalism would. There are some ex-players who make brilliant columnists. Someone like Philly McMahon in the Indo on a Saturday is a must-read. There are some who will spend 2 minutes talking to a ghostwriter for stuff that appears and essentially offer very little value added. I mean, they don't ask us to go out and play because we're writing about stuff, so the corollary. I think there's a dumbing down in that sense, that we're obsessed with personalities and celebrity.
Well, people who write about politics don't have to be politicians. People who write about business don't have to be CEOs. So it's just a strange...
Well, I mean, I regard journalism as an art. My love of journalism is a love of words, and I love the symphony of language. That was what attracted me to the trade. Conor Houlihan was a hero. My heroes were sports writers rather than athletes. And I think there is, when I talked earlier about that need for quality, if you have people who write well, who make valid, coherent points, who challenge your opinions, I think someone who's qualified as a journalist is far more likely to do that than an ex-player.
Yeah, so David, this punditization, if that's a thing, you're not fully signed up for that.
Well, Again, you know, probably similar to the fact that they're all forms of media now. I mean, they're all forms of discussion, and it shows, one, the strength and popularity of sport, still the enduring popularity of sport, and obviously then the monetization of it, which is maybe linked to the early faltering days in this century of the traditional old media, whatever you like to call it, when they didn't cope with the internet and have belatedly done so and are thankfully catching up in a sense. But, you know, there should be room for all. And then again, it's really back down to the storytelling and the art of writing and craft of writing that we all love, and that discovery of stories and characters and relating those is that one would hope that, one, the industry that provides it, and also the consumer base, like a lot of other forms of art or entertainment, whether it be television or music or movies, that they can be discerning. And sometimes they can watch trashy television, sometimes high art television, the same with movies. So that there is a room for both. And you can kind of, this week with the, you know, the infamous commentary around an English football club, and therein that, you know,
Which one is that? You're being too oblique, even for me.
See, it's been forgotten about already.
Okay,
but that there is a sense of disposability to that, and that's fine. I mean, you can't rail against that, like an angry man against the cloud. But there's also
I've got to give it a try.
But there's there's also room then for something else.
Okay, well, let me put another one of my other pet theories. I'm really getting them out today, Alana. One of them is that sport is too big. Now, what I mean by that is, you've got referees threatened, you've hate mail going to managers, you've guys beaten up. I mean, you've had GA, club GA, people putting boots of cars. I mean, you've had crazy stuff, right? I mean, are we almost too, is there too much sport? Has it gone too intense? Is the rivalry too big? Has it kind of left its Cortinian roots or whatever? Like, am I just totally barking up the wrong tree? I'm including myself. I'll be shouting at the TV too, right? I mean,
I understand that to a degree, but certainly as someone who admires sport, I definitely couldn't get enough of it. So I don't know if that'd be a theory that would sit with everyone now, but yeah, that's the way I'd say it anyways. And especially, I know even like a passion area of mine would be women's sport. You know, it's often kind of circulated, like, where is this all going to go or whichever. But I think, going back to what Dave was saying, like, a good story is a good story, whether it's related to whoever it might involve. And then, yeah, there's different audiences, just to double down on that point as well, that would pick up on different pieces of content. So even like over the last few months there, I was working on a series, same but different kind of thing, but that was the name of it. But with that, it explored women's sport and then all kind of different aspects within that. And just to go back to that point, like, it had written articles, but also you had your podcast and your videos. And like, I'm sure lots of people wouldn't have seen it at all, but if you did, like, maybe a certain people picked up on the podcast or other people for the articles. So there are different audiences and different mediums for which all of these stories can proliferate through.
I think you spoke about the sort of the proliferation of sport and the emotion. We live in an angry age. We live in an age where everybody has an opinion, where everybody is on social shouting louder than everybody else. And I think people who live ordinary lives are looking for extraordinary moments, and sport is still one of the things that does that.
Yeah, I think, suppose it's maybe it's the tone of it. Like, I see, and I'm as bad as anyone here, but you do see people like that player, get him out, yeah. Get him gone. Like, there's a real aggression to it.
There's no perspective anymore. No. It's instant gratification. And I think that's where there's a job for sports journalists to step away and offer the perspective that when there's all screaming voices, to show a bit of calm and try and capture the essence and the truth of the moment. Because great sporting moments. On Gaeltacht won an intermediate All-Ireland at Croke Park last week. And the scenes and the emotions, there was pure joy, there was euphoria, there was a sense of community, a sense of place. And great sport touches people at the heart.
Okay.
And I think your job is to then reflect that.
David, just to look at the profession, right? A lot of people texting in about what they call super sports journalists, right? So these are people who maybe have made a lot of money, like, and we could talk about the people who became famous to do with Lance Armstrong and all of that whole thing with David Walsh and all of that. So is there in the profession, so people are saying some of the great journalists, apart from you three, of course, are Jerry Thornley, Andy Mitten, David Walsh. These are names that have been thrown out. I'm not saying this is fair, right? But is there in the profession a sort of a any hierarchy? Is there sort of the ones that lots of people know, and then there's other people, and then there's people who are just doing match reports? I mean, just as in, is there a hierarchy? And
I mean, there's a hierarchical nature to a senior nature, but I think the essence of it is that, you know, just alluding to what Roy said there, is that, you know, I think there's a respect, and it's taken a few years, and we are in a turbulent age, and, you know, you reference, is there too much sport? It's too much of everything, you know. So there's an element of the sports media having the confidence for their senior writers, their senior producers of content, as we are all becoming now as well, in whatever form, but knowing that some can produce video or audio content better than others, or some can do both, or can be married, and how that's married. But that the quiet authority, the quiet authoritative voice, can sometimes be the loudest in this tumult of noise, which a lot of it is, and those the kind of empty rhetorical, you know, get this player out, or all that anger that, you know, sometimes if we just step back, and again, even in terms of dealing with events, it has always recently been always final whistle and get this out now and get this verdict out now, and the manager must go because of this loss. But there's an element that sometimes the media is stepping back and allowing.
David,
okay,
sounds like he's written that a few times.
Yeah. And mostly got it wrong. But there is an element now that a lot of these writers, whoever mentioned, and people will all have their favourites, that one or two of us are allowed to maybe step back for a few hours, whether it's even an event, somebody leaving a job or somebody coming into a job or a controversy, that, okay, we can have the immediate reaction, but we need to set aside 6 hours for a quiet voice just to impart a little bit of their knowledge.
A quiet reflection. I like the idea of this. No, I think it's an important point. We're going to have to leave it there, and we have to pay the bills as well. So let me just reintroduce sign off our panel. We have Roy Curtis, who is a columnist with the Irish Daily Star. We have Alana Canan, who is a sports writer with The Independent and other affiliates, as she likes to say. And David Kelly, heard last voice there. He is chief sports analysis writer with the Irish Independent. Thanks to all of you. We've plenty. You've got a conversation going, I thought. I might be saying maybe hear more about it. So thank you very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Planning another business trip soon? When you fly Emirates, you can really make the most of your journey. Emirates offers a luxurious chauffeur-driven transfer from your door to and from the airport. You'll have access to the Emirates lounge, where you can enjoy a drink, explore an international menu, or even take a shower. And on your flight, you can enjoy all the comforts of Emirates' world-class service. Get more from your business trips with Emirates. Book now on emirates.com.